Welcome to the IWA podcast. With just over a week to go before the historic Scottish vote, the polls are narrowing and we all begin to think what that means. I'm joined by Lord Jeremy Purvis of Tweed, a Liberal Democrat member of the House of Lords and a former member of the Scottish Parliament and now chair of the all-party parliamentary group on reform, decentralisation and devolution. Jeremy, you've been giving a speech here in Cardiff this morning to a convention of young people. It's quite clear the polls are getting closer, but most observers would still conclude it's likely to be a no vote, albeit a narrow one. What does that mean?
I think the most fundamental aspect, this is with much more of my kind of party political hat on, it will mean that the issue has been resolved. So it will be that if there is a no vote, then after an exhaustive two-year campaign with all of the issues being explored, all of the funding necessary, fully funded campaigns, the people will have decided that Scotland stays in the UK. That is it is a fundamental, and I think it's worth starting with the fundamentals for that. But it does mean that the job is not done, in my view, that it will mean that Scotland will have decided to stay in the UK, but because there will be a significant people who didn't vote that way, their hopes and expectations do need to be addressed. Some will never be able to be addressed with Scotland still being in the UK, but I think many of those who will have voted yes will have both expectations raised significantly by the yes campaign, but equally will be, I think, assuaged if there is a process of reform to the UK that is delivered afterwards. So might fill someone with dread for me to say that all the issues have not been resolved. They will have been addressed, the biggest and the most fundamental, yes, of course, but there will actually be much more further work to be done.
The campaign will have seen the yes vote go from a relatively low level to a very close to victory. If it may yet win, but assuming your scenario is correct, they'll just miss out. So they have a huge surge of momentum and excitement. And isn't it a little bit optimistic, if not naive, to expect the yes campaigners to roll away and lie down?
It's most certainly the case that they are outperforming trend. It was only the last opinion poll, really, other than one rogue one, where most commentators say there was a rogue one a few months ago. It's only now that the vote for independence is starting to match the vote that the SNP received in the last Scottish Parliament elections. So we are only in the position, really, of the SNP having won sufficient support to match their party standing. Now, I do believe that there will be many people who vote yes, not necessarily because of the great positive momentum and excitement. It's that they really do not like the coalition government in Scotland for a number of reasons. The reason why I say that is, I think, demonstrated by the position that the Yes campaign has taken over the last week or so, where they effectively have introduced a more of a party election process to a constitutional debate. The NHS issue is, I think, very clear. Because NHS is really devolved, the funding has been going up, they have £126 million more this year than they had last year for the NHS in Scotland, but they're nevertheless saying there will be cuts, there will be privatisation because of what the coalition's doing in England. And that's introducing, I think, a very different kind of dynamic. So that's why I think that is slightly more transitory. Nevertheless, they will still have voted yes in a referendum, cast a vote that they will always be asked about subsequent to the referendum. So it is that's why I do believe that they will be able to address some of their position by a further process of reform in the UK.
So you don't think unionists should take a strong yes vote too seriously, because you think it can be attributed to short-term political factors and not an explicit support for independence?
Oh, well, I absolutely will take it seriously, but I think that actually part of... I do believe that many people who will vote yes will also be comforted by reform to the relationship between Scotland and the UK post-referendum. So I think that their hopes and aspirations can maybe be met, if not in entirety, very substantially. And that's why I think it's very important that there is a process post-referendum if we win a no vote.
Say there's a yes vote, a very narrow yes vote, and if, as you're suggesting, you don't think that all the people who voted yes are voting yes necessarily because they want to see an independent Scotland. They're voting as a protest vote. And a yes vote simply signals the start of negotiations. It doesn't signify immediately an independent Scotland. It signals a negotiation. Are you suggesting then that in the negotiation that the British state wouldn't take that vote as seriously because it would try to diminish the importance of some of those votes?
I think it would be taken very seriously. I think if there was a yes vote, I think it would get to the real core of actually our whole entity in the United Kingdom. I think it would be fundamental. I do not believe that there would be the view that they somehow think the people didn't really mean it, or we can have a hard bargain and they'll want to come back and there'll be a big clamour for another referendum. That has been presented sometimes. It was presented quite regularly early on. That, I'm convinced, will not be the situation. We are far too developed now, I think, as far as a referendum goes. Now, how people themselves will see that, if their negotiations result in what effectively is a poor deal for Scotland, because they cannot demand the other countries in the UK to provide everything that the SNP wanted in the white paper on currency, on the social, on all of the different unions aspects. Their expectations have been risen so hard. I think that there will be a degree of disappointment for it. That is why I've raised repeatedly the issue that how is that negotiated deal ratified by the people in Scotland who voted yes, or even overall? And I'm still not persuaded that there is actually a robust way of ratifying that deal. That's one of the flaws of the yes arguments, in my view.
So even if there is a yes vote, people of Scotland can't expect to get everything they might think they're going to get, because there will be pushback from the British government.
What is in the white paper is a list of expectations that the position of the Scottish government will be agreed to by England, Wales, and Northern Ireland. And you cannot take that for granted, nor can you take every other, when we're here in Cardiff where there's the NATO summit, nor can you take for granted that all other NATO countries will be thinking, this new applicant country wants to come in and not only wants to apply to us, but actually they now want to dictate how we have our nuclear posture around the world. And also, not all other countries in the European Union will say to Scotland, yeah, of course, come in. And of course, you can have all of the opt-outs. You just won a referendum by claiming you're the sixth richest country in the world. And of course, here's the rebate that the UK negotiated many years ago. And of course, you can have anything you want on fisheries rights, on all the different aspects. I think it, therefore, what would actually then be seen to be an independent Scotland, with independent in inverted commas, may well be quite substantially different than what's in the white paper. Therefore, I think that how that is then ratified is an issue. The Scottish government has said it doesn't require any public overall ratification, because it's simply the Scottish Parliament elected in 2016 that would do it. But given the fact that it's the existing MSPs that would be negotiating that with the rest of the continuing UK, I think that is problematic. I mean, it is one of the flaws about how you do bring about an independent country. But
so there'll be this, in the event of a yes vote, there'll be this period of interregnum.
Yes.
And there's, from what you're saying, a real potential that this could go sour, that the British government will dictate tough terms, the international community will dictate tough terms. The optimism of those, especially if it's a very narrow vote, might melt away, but nonetheless they're committed from the vote to have an independent country. You know, what happens if then the public mood does change and opinion turns against an independent Scotland, but they're still committed to it? Things could get quite uncomfortable.
Yes, and there's also the quirk that there would be still be a United Kingdom general election during this process that is not yet fully resolved as to what it would be, and the rump of MPs elected from Scotland would only sit for a year. That's what the current situation is, and if there's a yes vote, the position that I would be having in the House of Lords, which would be debating it, and certainly in the House of Commons, would be looking at this issue in very close detail. We've already had a debate on it. There is a Constitutional Affairs Committee in the House of Lords published its report looking at some of these consequences. But I think the more fundamental aspect is that people who have voted yes have voted for a prospectus that welfare provision would be higher, taxes would be lower, public expenditure would be higher. The Scottish Government said 3% year on year from 2016. These are very big expectations. In addition to that, that we would, all of the other aspects for international recognition, etc., would go through before March 2016. I think that's a big ask, given the fact that Scotland has reorganised its policing into one single police force. Its computer system will not be ready until after what they propose to be Independence Day, and that's what work's being done now to actually to set up a new social security system as well as everything else so it's ready before Independence Day is rather incredible in my view. But expectations will be sky high, and therefore there's managing that is really important.
In the event of a no vote, possibly a narrow no vote, you are one of the chief cheerleaders for the concept of Devo Plus, which is giving more powers to the Scottish Parliament. It seems quite like the UK parties have said they will give more powers to the Scottish Parliament. What does that mean for the rest of the UK, and obviously for Wales in particular, where everybody rushes to try and keep Scotland in the Union? What does it mean for the stability and the shape of the other bits?
I think that's a... That would be the key to what happens if there's a no vote. And I think I've tried to outline it as a two-stage process. So the first stage is to deliver the Scottish powers for the Scottish Parliament. So it's strengthening the Scottish Parliament of the further fiscal and welfare powers and some constitutional standing aspects. The second aspect, be concluded by the first Queen's speech in 2015 after the new Parliament is formed. So that is something that can be done bilaterally between Scotland and the rest and the UK government. The second stage, in my view, is a process that does look at the relationship between the nations and then the Westminster institutions itself. It's what I would call British federalism, some of other terminology for it. And to bring them about, so the Secretary of State for Scotland has announced that there will be a conference on the new Scotland in October in Scotland to help bring about cross-party dialogue, pre-consultation of what further Scottish powers would be. And I've called for a conference of the new union to be convened early in 2015 after the general election, be concluded in 2015, and to see the delivery of what these changes would be.
And that's akin to a constitutional convention?
Well, my proposals are that it is between the... national government and the national assemblies and parliaments, but open to dialogue within the old party group how that's come about. But I think that time rises, then it's consistent, because it means that there can be reforms to the UK Parliament before the 2020 general election, and there can also be a process consistent in Wales with what is being discussed about a potential new referendum for the further powers on the silk process. So it actually is, it does not cut across the debate and discussions that you're having in Wales, and also it provides opportunity for the change to procedures in Westminster. I would even like to see House of Lords reform on that agenda. But I'm keen that we try before the general election to resolve what will happen after the general election, so that actually what happens after the general election is simply the delivery of what was outlined before. Now, that's a big ambition, and we're close to the timing for that, but that's really one of the driving factors that I've had for the all-party group, so that actually by 2020 we see the very long-term relationship between the nations effectively on a very, very stable footing for the next generation.
15 years ago, Ron Davies, the former Welsh Secretary, wrote a pamphlet for the IWA in which he said, the genie's out of the bottle and it won't go back in again.
Yes.
Whatever the outcome of this referendum, the UK will never be the same again.
I think that's true. And I would want to put to bed what he also said, which was devolution is not an event, it's a process. I think that we do need to draw to a conclusion of what the long-term relationship is. Permanently. To some extent, that's taking devolution to its natural conclusions. I think Scotland is ahead in many respects for that, but I certainly think that it is as valid for Wales. Northern Ireland obviously has its own process, but I think that they are complementary. And then actually, we allow the debate about English governments to be taken in England. But it's fundamental. The reason why I don't think that we can continue with devolution being a process, not an event, is that we do need to say this is, for the long term, the permanent relationship between the institutions in Edinburgh, Cardiff and London. And that is the real prize. And as I, in the remarks I made just a few moments ago, that does need to come with an improved narrative as to why that exists. And we're not very creative in how we actually describe this. And I think that we do need to do that. And if that is the case, I'm much more confident that this will be a much more long-term settled situation.
Jeremy Purvis, Lord Purvis of Tweed, thank you very much. And you can subscribe to the IWA podcast on iTunes.